world-famous Phil Hendry Show. So enough of the Woody Allen, man.
So we don't get to comment on the Woody Allen at all.
Well, it's very unseemly, and it's tragic. It's a lot of stuff. It involves a woman that was assaulted as a child. It involves, you know...
Well, I think that Woody Allen, you know, he...
What, bud? You what do you got to say about it, huh?
Well, you said some things during the commercial break that I think bear repeating. And I thought they were very intelligent, Phil. But I'm not qualified to repeat them because I can't remember them.
Why can't you remember them? Because they were, they had the same effect on you they had on me. They were boring.
Yeah, well, that's it, yes.
Oh, they were boring. And you waited to say it now. Why?
I didn't wait. I was waiting for you to be quiet about it, Phil. And you didn't end your little speech until the commercial break was almost over.
Yes, and so I was going to say, if you want to know, I appreciate what you're saying, Phil. But please, please stop because it's boring me.
All right, you know what? I'm going to tell you this right now. Now I'm going to keep talking about it. Now you've pissed me off so much.
See, I told you.
Oh, baby.
Just, I'm going to... Oh, man.
I mean, you know, I feel that I agree with you. I agree with you that Dylan Farrell is, in fact, telling the truth.
I'm just going to say this, and then I don't want to talk about it. I'm going to talk about the Olympics. What is her incentive? And this whole thing about brainwashing, you know, well, she's brainwashed. All right. Brainwashed. Now, that means that I personally feel this brainwashing has been so effective that even as an adult, the brainwashing continues. Either she's continually brainwashed, or the original brainwashing was so great that it has maintained its hold on her mind. She's not a very independent thinking person. She's almost zombified by Mia Farrow, who's got her just repeating this party line and convincing her that something happened that didn't happen. Well, we know the opposite. A victim of molestation may be told it didn't happen, may be brainwashed into thinking it didn't happen, but they know that it did. And it's just a matter of them keeping the truth down. Mia Farrow, on the other hand, has been accused by Woody Allen of brainwashing her the opposite way. It did happen. It did happen. But it's the same truth that is being kept down. And it's the same truth that sort of motivates that individual to keep, you know, keep it hidden because they're afraid of what will happen if they speak the truth. Or we're supposed to believe that Dylan Farrow shares her mother's hatred of Woody Allen so much that she will make up lies about this guy to destroy his... But why? I understand Mia Farrow hating the guy's guts, but what about the kid? We seem to think that kids are so empty-headed and utterly and completely without any personality, any motivation on their own, that you can just fill their head full of anything, and for the rest of their lives, they're going to believe it and act on it and be that thing. They're like robots. They're like just two-legged robots that you can program any way you want. We know from our experience with human nature and human beings that is not a real real state. We know that people can be traumatized into acting, behaving, and even saying words that we want them to say. But we also know that we cannot eliminate from them what the reality is of their life and their experience. We know that molestation victims keep that inside of them, even as they are told to say it never happened, even as they speak those words that it didn't happen out of fear that something will happen to them. They know. The same thing with this kid, this Dylan Farrell. If she is brainwashed into being told that she was molested, deep down she knows it didn't happen. She knows she's lying. She knows that she's being told by her mother and others to speak an untruth in order to wreck this man because this man is deserving of being wrecked. Well, you know, Phil, I mean, she was told by her mother that the thing happened, and she believes it happened. She believes it happened. You mean to tell me that That woman, Mia Farrow, can get her daughter to actually believe and feel and sense and know that she was laying on her stomach, she was in front of a train set, her father molested her, he whispered in her ear, he said all these things as she is, to this day, is sickened by the sight of trains because it reminds her of that day in that closet in that upstairs bedroom. I'm expected to believe that was entirely concocted by Mia Farrow, placed inside the brain of that kid, and she repeats it to this day as if it actually happened, when in point of fact it didn't. That's how traumatized and how brainwashed she is. Mia Farrow, man, she's going to go down in history as the greatest brainwasher since those cats and that Manchurian candidate. I mean, she's better than Big Brother, you know.
Who's that?
What do you mean, who's that?
That's the 1984 guy.
Yes, don't you remember Long Live Big Brother, 1984?
I'm not familiar.
Well, whatever, man. In Big Brother, the whole idea behind the 1984 Big Brother state was to convince you of the goodness and the truth of Big Brother, and then they'd execute you. See, what happened was they arrested these political dissenters. They arrested these thought criminals, as they call them in the world of 1984. You're a thought criminal. Like in Winston Smith's case, the hero of 1984, he had sex with this girl. He fell in love. He did the worst thing you could do. His loyalty fell away from Big Brother in the state, and it fell to his own selfish, base needs. He didn't even really... It wasn't really about him falling in love, because he said to her, he said to Julia, the character in 1984, he says, I don't want to love you. I just want to have sex. And he said to her, I don't want to know that you love me. I just want to know that you love the act of sex. And she tells him, I love it. So they want to take themselves as far away from purity and as far away from the Big Brother ideals and as far away from, they want to get right down in the mud, man. They want to get as far away from Big Brother as they can get. And so it's the base act of sex. And this is a state, the 1984 state, that has thought police. In other words, if you think something that is not approved by the state, you're a criminal. You can be arrested and you will be tortured. You will be tortured to the point where you now accept Big Brother in all of your being, in your heart, in your soul. You weep for the fact that you never loved Big Brother. You cry when you see Big Brother's portrait. You stand in the street and exhort Big Brother's name. You would go to your death for Big Brother. You now believe. You're a believer. You have been cured. You have been cleansed. And that's when the state takes you and kills you. They won't kill you until you are convinced. They won't kill you until you've been changed. They won't kill you until you've been cleansed. They will not send a thought criminal to his death if he still thinks these things. They will only send you to your death when you love Big Brother and you've repented and you now believe in the preeminence of the state. And that's what they did to Winston Smith, and that's what they did to Julia. And they did it by exploiting their fear. What is the one thing in the world that they fear more than anything else? And they got them to turn on each other by threatening them with that thing. Now, if Mia Farrow is that good...
Well, I don't think... Are you kidding? You think Mia Farrow is that good?
She'd have to be. She's got this kid believing and thinking that something happened, right on down to the specifics of where she was, how her body position, what she was looking at, what room she was in, what her father was saying to her. I mean, right on down to those specifics, Mia Farrow has pumped that crap right into that kid's head, and that kid believes it, and that's what Woody Allen wants me to believe. Mia Farrow is as good as number one or whatever that guy was.
The guy in 1984, they should have called him number two on account of that's where he's from.
Well, isn't that... Oh, woo! That's just dirty.
You know, Bud, are you nuts or something? You're saying that the guy in 1984 dropped out of someone's rear end? Why, that guy is good. He's better than good. He's the prince of effing darkness.
Well, I got to agree with the general, you know.
I got to agree with the general. Jesus.
Well, I do. All right, that's all I got to say about that, man.
Well, you said more about 1984 than you did about Woody Allen, which, by the way, I found it very interesting, Phil. I never read 1984, and...
Fine, Margaret, thank you. I got to take a break. We'll be back. Phil Henry Show. Excuse me. World-famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com. For those of you who follow the Bobby Dooley podcasts, Bobby Dooley is returning next week in full form. There has been a lag in the Bobby podcast as well as the new Steve Bozell Injustice Files podcast as we reorganize and retool the podcast. So it's all good, man. We're going to have more podcasts than ever before, but right now we're trying to figure out where we want to put them and how we want to do it. Bobby will be back. Don't worry. It's just one of these things. You know, I don't believe in just spilling this crap out there, because what happens is there is a confusion of content, and because we do have a paywall on our website and we want to respect our subscribers, we don't want to just start punching shit. Excuse my language. I guess you'll have to dump me there. I just said the S word.
Oh, my God. You get so relaxed. You say S and F and MF.
I never say MF. I apologize, folks. I didn't mean to say that. But we just spill this stuff out there, and sometimes it doesn't have any rhyme or reason. So we are trying to do a better job of curating. How's that for a 50-cent word, General?
I like curating is what you do to ham, isn't it?
What do you mean it's what you do to ham?
Are you listening to me?
I didn't say cure. I said curate.
Well, you curate. All right. That's fine. You don't curate ham.
No, you cure ham.
You cure ham? No, you don't cure ham.
But the ham got a disease.
Would you guys knock it off with the jokes, okay?
I don't think they're joking. I think they think you mean cure as in cure a disease.
Curing ham is to process the ham to either marinate it or to smoke it or to otherwise treat the ham so that it has a certain flavor. There's an aging process. You know what I'm saying? Haven't you ever seen a ham in a store that you buy?
What are you yelling about? You're all sitting there going, hey, I've seen a ham in a store. Yeah, I've seen a ham in a store.
You know what, bud? The next thing you're going to see hanging from the butcher's rack there is you. You'll be seeing yourself because you'll be dead. So you'll be a ghost, and you'll see something hanging from a hook, and it'll be you.
Oh, my God, Phil, that's ghoulish.
Dude, shut up. You can't talk to me that way.
Well, then quit talking to me like you're a brain-dead idiot.
What do you mean he'll be a ghost?
Don't worry about it, General. All right, so curing ham. I don't even know what it was I was saying. I will just simply say that, so the podcasts are going to be properly curated. That was it, right?
Yes, you were saying curate as in what they do at a museum. What are you laughing at?
At a museum.
You know, Phil, don't make me out to be some Southern belle sitting there with a mint julep crammed.
All right.
I'm sorry.
With a mint julep crammed up your what?
Excuse me.
Uh-oh, she's pissed off.
What else is new? Are you kidding?
Yeah, she's angry every other show, isn't she?
Every other show?
No one has to sit still for that.
Right. You're right, Margaret. All right. So that's all I got to say about that, but...
Well, we got a couple people on a Twitter said that they didn't know that about 1984, and they want to read that.
Yeah, read 1984. Whatever, you know. 1984 is fine. It's a great book, but it's so far from where the world's heading. It is. It's so far from where the world is. It's far from where America is headed. America is in the opposite direction, in my opinion. America is not in danger of a police state. America is in danger of anarchy. America is in far more danger of becoming a completely disassociated, fractured, and anarchist state or series of states than at any other time in its history. And this, you know, one of the things, there's a theory.
I want to be in on this.
Yes, have a seat, Margaret. You can't just walk in and out of here.
Well, I am listening to this. I want to be in on this.
There's a theory that the idea of individual liberty, while absolutely and completely honorable and an honorable goal of our society and has been since the founding of our country, individual liberty, individual freedom, the ability to life, you know, the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, while that is a very important thing, it also empowers antisocial thinking. Because if you think about it, an individual who is consistently and continuously all about himself, his family, you know, and everything that we may consider in our most cynical to be kind of rednecky, you know. I'm all about my family, my property, my home, my me, my moon, my cow, my this, my that, and all of the rest of you can stick it. That becomes very antisocial, and in the wrong individual, it becomes sadistically destructive, because that's exactly what a psychopath is. A psychopath is all about himself. And the reason why I'm bringing that up is because in societies where the opposite has traditionally been the case, where you are encouraged to be a part of a larger community, you're encouraged to contribute not just to your own family, but to the health, traditionally, say, of the village, and then the health of the community, and then the health, kind of ever increasingly in these wider rings, responsible, for instance, in the to your elders. The Chinese Constitution makes it legally required that you take care of your grandparents, for instance. So this is a legal requirement in China that you are responsible for the well-being of your grandparents. So that's opposite in a lot of ways to what America has traditionally been about. Not that we encourage abusing our grandparents, I'm not saying that, but we leave it up to the individual to have the correct moral compass and the correct decision morally to make. However, in those societies like China and many of the Asian societies, the incidence of psychopathy and antisocial behavior is much, much lower than it is in Western societies such as our own.
Because they don't encourage...
Exactly, because they don't encourage this sort of independent me thinking. Now, yeah, it is true that a psychopath is a mutant. They're an abnormal person. There's no question about it. But even if you're a mutant and an abnormal person in a society where the responsibility to others is encouraged, your destructive tendencies are also sort of kept down or kept to a minimum. It's less likely you're going to act out in a psychopathic way than if you were living in America. Now, you know, there's probably crimes that happen in China that we don't have over here.
Well, like what? You talk about like the stuff that they have over there that we wouldn't like what?
Well, what, probably stealing a cow. Well, not stealing a cow, but rifling the communal cow or something.
What do you mean, rifling the communal cow?
What's that mean?
I'm talking about the commune thinking is what they have over in the commie country. And if you rifle their cow...
What do you mean, rifle their cow?
You talking about like rifle a file?
Yes, over here you rifle files over there. You can rifle the fish tag, I don't know.
You mean like steal cows?
I don't know if I mean steal cows, but whatever they do communally, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either. So,
rifle a cow.
Oh, let it go, will you, Margaret, for God's sake?
Yeah, well, there must be something they do over there that's very much a part of their thing. So I brought all that crap up to say whatever the hell it was I said, I don't know, but thank you very much.
Man, you're losing it, Mr. Henry. Did you get any sleep last night?
No, I did not get any sleep last night. Thank you for asking. No, I did not. I had to get up early and go to LAX. And I got to tell you something. I went to LAX this morning at like a bat out of hell because I was taking my friend to the airport for an 8 o'clock flight back to D.C. And I had said, well, I better be up and on the road by 6. No, not if the plane leaves at 8. You better not, man. You got to leave at least an hour earlier than that. You got to give yourself 2 hours to get to L.A., from the beach community up here of Port Hueneme and the Ventura County line, 2 hours, or brother, you are a dead man. So I get out of here at 5:15, pick her up, and I mean, I was hauling ass.
And you drove irresponsibly and could have killed someone. Yes, I heard the whole story.
No, I didn't drive irresponsibly. I drove fast, but I didn't drive irresponsibly, not at all.
Well, a lot of times people are coming in from out of town, man, and they think you're a madman, you know.
What are you talking about?
Well, there's a few people that came in from the Midwest that were driven around by you, Phil. I don't want to mention any names. But because they're not used to the mountains, they thought you were going to drive it off a cliff.
Who, me?
Yes.
Yeah, I've heard that before.
What do you mean, in from the Midwest?
Yeah, that guy Scoop from Detroit.
What about him?
He thought he's not used to mountains and stuff.
So he thought I was going to drive it off a cliff? Man, you got to be kidding me.
Phil, if you're not used to driving on these California mountain roads, and you come from the flatlands, it'll scare six shades of turd out of you. Excuse me for saying.
Yes,
Six shades of turd. Boy, that's ladylike.
Yes, it is. It was the... My God, you're judgmental.
All right, Phil, I'm talking to myself, folks. Drunken Sochi hijack bid ends in Turkey. Turkey scrambled two F-16 jets to force down an airliner from the Ukraine after an apparently drunk would-be hijacker ordered it to Sochi, where the Winter Olympics opening ceremony was underway. Officials say this drunk from Ukraine, brandishing what he said was a detonator, tried to gain access to the cockpit of the aircraft, which had 110 people on board. We're going to get into this story and others when we come back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com. Our special Valentine's Day special is in effect, baby. Go to our website and get a Backstage Pass subscription for a year and get a gift subscription for 1 year free. And give it to your Valentine. Phil Hendry Show. All right. Yeah. Yeah. Phil Hendry Show. So in Russia right now are the Olympics, and with the Olympics in Russia, just like Olympics in any other country, comes security. And have you ever heard the word security uttered more than you hear it uttered in these times? You know, somebody was saying to me, a much younger person than me, one of my girlfriends.
Oh, would you stop?
I'm kidding. No, someone said to me, can you imagine... During the Manson trial, there were members of the Manson family walking through the courthouse carrying knives. Can you imagine that? And I said, back then, yeah, I sort of can, because the cops in those days thought hippies were not violent people. Manson was violent, and the women that were on trial with him were violent, but the hippies were sort of seen as non-threatening. Otherwise, how do you answer for the fact that indeed there were members of the Manson family walking through that courthouse during those days of the trial with knives on them. And God knows, maybe even more deadly instruments than that. You know, what police force, what bailiff, what sheriff department would allow that? Well, it could only possibly be one that had no real concerns when it came to that kind of security. Such were the times. Such was America in 1969, 1970. Today, we couldn't even fathom it. Back then, yeah, you know. Today, we talk about, and I'm a member of a generation that straddles both eras. Now, most of the people listening to me right now, you guys don't remember a time when there wasn't a concern about security. You don't remember a time when there wasn't somebody with a microscope up your ass every time you tried to get on an airplane, every time you tried to put a bag in an aircraft, every time you tried to check in. There's 5, 6, 7, 8 different places where somebody's checking your ID, making sure you're going through a scanner, making sure that the bag is x-rayed, making sure your carry-on's x-rayed, making sure you don't have a big carry-on, making sure you don't have a little tiny carry-on, making sure you don't have a little tiny,
whatever.
Right. And like that, man, you know, it's these are the times we live in. In Russia, they have a security force that they seem to think, and the rest of the world agrees, is one of the most badass bunch of guys that the world has ever known. They're called in varying configurations and units. They're called Spetsnaz. Don't ask me what it means.
What's it mean?
I don't know.
Well, Spetsnaz is a security force, not unlike our own, SEAL teams.
Yeah. Yeah, they are, and I'm not putting down the SEALs, because they're badass guys. But these Spetsnaz guys pride themselves, or so they say, on not relying on so much technology. The SEALs have... lots and lots of weapons and toys and Velcro and this and that and sights and scopes and knives. And the Spetsnaz guys train, and maybe the SEALs do as well. I have no reason to believe that they... How much hand-to-hand do they do, General?
Who are you talking about?
The SEALs.
The SEALs?
Yes, the ones in the Navy.
Oh, all right.
What were you talking about?
Well, I was talking about the SEALs, but then you started talking about hand-to-hand, and I was thinking about the SEALs SEAL land, or whatever it's called.
What's SEAL land?
Wherever the SEALs live.
You mean the ocean SEALs?
Yeah, the ones with the fins.
Right. Because you said hand-to-hand, I'm thinking, well, there's no hands that I'm aware of. There's fins. And I know it sounds stupid.
All right, we're talking about one thing here and one thing only, and we're talking about paramilitary forces.
Yes, all right. Well, the SEALs are trained in hand-to-hand, as is Delta Force, which is the ostensibly is the Army Special Forces.
So Delta Force is under the aegis of the U.S. Army, correct?
But for the most part, yes. The SEALs are the Navy. The U.S. Air Force, they have their special forces, and so it goes. The Marines have recon, and I think the Marines have an even more specialized force than recon.
What's it called?
I don't know. The Marine Special Forces is something very imposing. It's like Marine Death Squad 5. Or, I think it's Death Squad 5.
Are you kidding?
Do I look like I'm kidding?
All right, now hold on, General. Don't get pissed off.
She's asking me if I'm kidding.
Well, what do you mean, Death Squad 5?
The Marine Special Forces, just as the Air Force.
What about a Coast Guard?
I don't know about the... Yes, I guess the Coast Guard has some unit of bloodthirsty cutthroat animals, yes.
The Coast Guard has a unit of bloodthirsty cutthroat animals.
Well, I'm not calling them that. What I'm trying to say to you is... The Marines have the blood and guts, the bucket of guts brigade. I don't know what.
What are you laughing at?
I doubt if the Marines have some force called the bucket of guts brigade.
Well, you know the Marines are very, very tough.
Yeah, I'm sure they are, but I'm not saying that I'm not saying they're not tough. I'm saying they probably, if they've got a special forces, it's probably got a more professional name than Death Squad 5.
What are you laughing at?
I'm laughing at Death Squad 5. Anyway, the Russians have Spetsnaz. Let's just talk about them. They, because I've heard them interviewed, they pride themselves on their manual, the hand-to-hand, the martial arts, what we call the martial arts. And martial arts, as you know, is not just judo, and it's also good old-fashioned pugilism, using your fists, and the use of the knife. And they are very proud of that. And if you talk to a Spetsnaz soldier, he will tell you that they're about as effective as any guy, any fighting man in the world using their particular methods. Now, they're also outstanding riflemen and all of the things that you would expect of a special forces unit. And it was Spetsnaz that went into that theater in Moscow that had been taken over by Chechenian terrorists. And you know the story. They had suicide bombers. These were females, Muslim females, who had suicide bombs strapped to them. They also had other terrorists that had fanned out inside the theater and were keeping the crowd under control. They had a command structure of some kind where the commanding members of this terrorist group were in some upstairs offices in this theater. And they pretty much had this entire theater under their control. And into this came the Spetsnaz force, and within minutes had killed all of them and had saved the lives of the people inside.
Now, hold on. These are the people that died, though.
Now, hold on. You haven't heard the whole story. Hold on.
I know the story.
Wait a minute. What happened to those people, and the story has not probably been as fully told as it should be. The Spetsnaz guys did a brilliant job. They went in and killed all these terrorists, saved everybody's life. They had a little bit of luck, and I guess you hear any of those guys say you got to have some luck, and one of the lucky things that happened is I think at least one of these so-called black widows, these Muslim women that had the suicide bombs, at least one or two of their bomb packs misfired. They didn't go off. I think one of the women tried to detonate. She couldn't, and of course they were all killed by the riflemen with this Spetsnaz force. They went upstairs, they cornered the leader of this unit, and they got into a brief firefight and killed him. Now the job is done. And in come the paramedics. And they're being assisted by some of these soldiers because they need every swing and you know what, as the saying goes. The paramedics are the ones that blew it, because what happened was a certain kind of nerve gas had been pumped into the building to assist in knocking out or otherwise sort of neutralizing to some degree the terrorists. Now, a lot of the people were affected too, and as they brought them out onto the sidewalk, they laid them on their backs, which is a no-no. The air was cold. laying them on their backs combined with the cold air that they were breathing caused a lot of these people to suffocate because of this nerve gas that they had ingested. They should have been laid on their sides. The responding paramedical units were at fault. They had not been briefed. Either they hadn't been briefed on what was being used in terms of the gas, or they just simply didn't know what they were doing. But either way, it was the way these people were, I guess the word is triaged, that caused their death. And a lot of people died as the direct result of just being laid on their back in that cold air outside the theater, having breathed this nerve gas. They were not killed as the result of the Spetsnaz guys and what they did. Those men saved their lives. But if you hear these men interviewed to this day, they are saddened by the fact that people died. And they're saddened by the fact that they don't think it was a 100% success because the lives of those people were not 100% saved. Even though it wasn't their fault, they were not at fault. They still consider the mission to be compromised and that they didn't succeed. And it's too bad because it wasn't...
This was not their fault.
No, it wasn't their fault. They'd done their job. The paramedics, the medical staff, the rescuers that came in did not handle these injured and gassed people properly. And so it's a very interesting and kind of, you feel for these guys when they're interviewed in later years saying, and not only that, they're perceived to have caused the death of those people. They're perceived to have been less than professional because some of these people died and somehow these Spetsnaz guys did it. They didn't. It was their end of the operation was a 150% success. And then it was after the fact, after the terrorists had been killed, that the people died from this, not from the gas. The gas didn't kill them. It was the way they were handled outside the theater in the cold night air that ultimately caused them to suffocate.
Well, someone should publicize this, Phil.
Yeah, they did. He had it on a military channel and everything.
That's where I saw it. I saw it on a military channel.
Oh, that's why you watch that goofy thing. I don't watch it because I was in the military for 40 damn years. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of it, I tell you.
Take it easy, will you?
Uh-oh.
What?
Do you have a beer?
I had one beer.
Okay, that's why he's acting like a jackball. What kind of beer was it?
Schlitz malt liquor.
Okay,
Well, there you go.
Yeah, all right, so we're going to be back here on the Phil Henry Show. I promised you a rundown here on the Olympics, and maybe we'll get some... can we get a medal count, or is that happening?
Man, some of the events maybe is done.
I don't know. Well, we'll find out here. Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. Back with a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of the Olympic results and more news. Show and philhenryshow.com. Yeah. As well as TuneIn. If you have everybody has a smartphone. Everyone has a smartphone. So the thing that people are now realizing is the smartphone is where you can not only, you know, use your phone and have access to the internet, you can also listen to audio entertainment. You can watch TV. The smartphone that I have in my hand here, for those of you on Phil TV, you're looking right there at a picture of our radio show on my phone. There's also a listen live feature. This is now, if you lose this, you're almost losing something as valuable as your wallet. You know, you lose your phone or you lose your wallet, you have lost a big chunk of your life because all of your information, you know.
Well, everybody has in their wallet all of their credit cards, but your credit cards can be canceled. On the phone...
Yeah.
Excuse me, I'm not done talking, bud. On the phone is everything. Phone numbers. The names of people and so on and so forth, you see. So,
Yes?
That's all. You don't have to sit there all staring at... What is everyone staring at me for?
Well, Margaret, when Bud was going to say something, you go, excuse me, you know...
I had more to say. Now I'm done. What do you want, Bud?
Well, I was going to say that... Well, forget it.
What did you want to say, Bud?
Nothing.
What did you want when you interrupted her?
Nothing.
Well, then what did you interrupt her for?
I just want to see if I could.
Will you get out of here, man? God.
Swear to God, Phil, you're going to have to save me from a homicide charge.
You know, Margaret, one of these days people are going to believe you.
I hope they do.
Wow.
What does that mean?
It means what it sounded like. Wow. That's what it means. Harvey Wireman is going to join us here in a moment to, because we did want him on the line here, to give us some legal opinion. And this was actually suggested by my close personal friend, Nikki McKee here, our technical director. She said, get Harvey in here so we can make some kind of sense out of this rotten show you're doing. I'm kidding, Nikki. I know she didn't say that. Harvey, how you doing tonight?
Yeah, this is Harvey Wireman.
Harvey, how you doing? It's Phil.
Yeah, I'm doing great.
Wanted to ask you a question. I think it's a pretty good question. And it has to do with the Dylan Farrow thing. Do you know about this?
Yeah, Dylan Farrow, she's the daughter of Mickey Farrow, right?
Mickey Farrow, who's that?
The one that married Woody.
Oh, what are you talking of? Mia Farrow.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, Mia Farrow. She's the one that married Woody, right?
Woody.
Right, yeah, Woody. And I can't remember his last name, but he...
Woody Allen.
Woody Allen. All right. And he was a jazz... Not jazz. He made movies, but he had the name of Woody... Woody Herman, right?
No, it was Woody Allen, the movie maker.
You're thinking of Woody Herman, who played the clarinet.
He played the clarinet. Now you've lost me. I don't know who... What guy plays the clarinet?
Woody Herman played the clarinet. Herman? Woody Herman?
Oh, okay, yeah. But he wasn't married to that... He's not a pervert. It was this guy, Woody, right?
Woody Allen.
I understand Woody Allen. I got that concept. Is the general there?
I'm right. Yes, I'm right here, Harvey. Woody Allen is the guy we're talking about, not Woody Herman.
No, Woody Herman wasn't a pervert, as far as I knew, unless you want to fill me in on something different, General.
No, Woody Herman was not a pervert.
There was a cartoon character, and I said to somebody, I was talking to Dean Purcell, one of my law clerks. I said, look, you know Woody Woodpecker? And he goes, ha-ha, yeah. I said, how's about it if he was a pervert? And he said, well, you know, he was pecking wood. And I said, boy, you got that right. And we had it was a kind of a cute moment.
All right, we have with us here Harvey Wireman. He's an attorney, has done a great deal of... He's a criminal defense attorney by training. Harvey, in recent years, I know you're in semi-retirement. You've done some pro bono work for the ACLU, and you are often on our program to give us some advice. The question that we have for you, and I think it's a pretty good question, why can't Woody Allen sue for defamation or libel, or some combination thereof, given these, from his point of view, these outrageous accusations against him?
Well, it's libel is a tricky thing. The first thing that you've got to do when you want to prove libel is you have to prove it. The burden of proof is on the individual in a civil case. The burden of proof is on the individual that is suing, just as the burden of proof is on the prosecution in a criminal case. So if you bring a lawsuit, you have to prove two things. Number one, that your reputation can be damaged. That's number one. Number two, that your reputation has been damaged, and you have to quantify that. You have to come up with an actual number, or you have to come up with an actual set of facts and numbers that prove that there was real damage done to your reputation. And then three, you have to prove the veracity of the remarks, because it's not slander or libel if it's true.
Okay, that's an interesting point. So if he can't sue Mia Farrow and win, if what she... And who does he sue here? Does he sue his daughter?
I think it's rather unseemly to sue the daughter, because what you're... Woody Allen is saying...
His name is Woody. You've asked me to correct you if you mispronounced.
I appreciate it, Phil. Woody. Woody... Well, I know it's not Woodpecker.
Woody Allen, Harvey. It's Woody Allen.
Woody Allen. I'm sorry. Woody Allen. It would be very unseemly for him to bring an action, a civil action, against the very daughter that is the center of this. She would be viewed as being victimized yet again. Woody Allen himself, I'm sure, would not want to make her the object of his claim of damage. His claim of damage is against the ex-wife, Mike Farrell. Not Mike. It's a woman, right? He was married to a woman.
Yeah, he's married to Mia Farrow.
Hey, Mia Farrow, I apologize.
He was married. Woody Allen likes girl. He likes women. He's straight.
I know it, and I know that, and I know he's had a thing for. You know, the thing about Woody Allen is he's had a thing for young women for a long time, and that doesn't help him either. If you look at his movies, they are populated with underage, almost prepubescent, mini skirt wearing, bob haircut, pigtail, 12 years old going on 40. I mean, it is a veritable slideshow of quasi-porn, the likes of...
All right, hold on. We got to take a break. Can you hang with me through the news, Harvey?
Can I hang what?
Can you hang with me? Hold on. Put him on. Would you tell him?
Yeah, Mr. Wireman, can you...
Do it during the break. We'll be right back. We have Harvey Wireman with us, our... What are you looking at, Margaret?
Why do you you know that the old man is...
He has never indicated to me anything other than he likes being on the show and he likes to comment on these things.
Yes, I heard him say that, Margaret.
Well, I think you're taking advantage of the poor old fool because I think he's retired and he is... You know, what is that?
Music. It's our bumper music. We're going out.
You and I are going out.
Boom, boom, boom.
We're going out of the...
I'm sorry.
Down.
All right, anyway.
Right on for your feet.
This music's very sexual. It's very distracting.
With me?
Yeah.
Put you in my house.
Oh, God.
Anyway, we'll be right back. Boom.